here's a story from The World.
I saw a photo of a family not too far from us in Boston that set up an intricate pulley system to safely deliver candy and chocolate to trick-or-treaters this year. If they do go out this year, that's Halloween COVID-19 style. Also, let me be the bearer of some sad news. The chocolate industry is not so clean. It's got a well-documented problem with forced child labor. The U.S. Supreme Court is about to take up a case that may decide whether American companies can be held responsible. The World's Rupa Shenoy has our story.
What's not to love about chocolate?
That's the voice of actor Idris Elba in a video released last month by the Dutch ethically sourced chocolate brand Tony's Chocolate Only.
Well, 2 million children working illegally on cocoa plantations. That's unfair.
It's a well-documented problem. Big chocolate companies pledged to put an end to child slavery in the industry in 2001 under pressure from Congress. Yet earlier this month, the University of Chicago, in a report sponsored by the U.S. Department of Labor, found that some of the leading chocolate companies depend on cocoa produced by more than 1 million child laborers in West Africa.
Chocolate can be a powerful force of change. Join Tony's Chocolonely. Make illegal child labor and modern-day slavery a shame of the past.
Tony's Chocolonely was one of many interested parties that submitted amicus briefs last week in a case that's coming before the U.S. Supreme Court. The suit was filed by 6 men who say they were kidnapped as children from their native Mali and enslaved on cocoa plantations in Ivory Coast. They alleged that the U.S. arms of companies Nestle and Cargill knew that child labor was being used. And to hold those companies responsible, attorneys are using a law passed by the first U.S. Congress in 1789 called the Alien Tort Statute.
Yes, it was in 1789, but it is still on the books.
Catherine Gallagher at the Center for Constitutional Rights also filed an amicus brief in the case.
At the time that it was enacted, the Alien Tort Statute is clear that Congress intended there to be an option for non-U.S. citizens to come into U.S. courts and sue, especially U.S. nationals, when they've committed law of nations violations. And that's precisely the case before the Supreme Court in Nestle Cargill.
Human rights lawyers first started using the Alien Tort Statute to go after corporations in the 1990s. And John Bellinger says it caused chaos in the State Department. He was its legal advisor under Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice.
Foreign governments would come to me regularly at the State Department to complain, to say, this is not the job of U.S. judges to be adjudicating claims that occur in our countries.
Bellinger also submitted an amicus brief in the Nestle Cargill Supreme Court case on behalf of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. He says Congress didn't intend for U.S. judges to rule on alleged violations happening in other countries because it leaves open the possibility that foreign courts could do the same thing.
The United States, if the shoe is on the other foot, is concerned about the courts and prosecutors of other countries hearing claims about U.S. conduct in the United States or elsewhere.
He says that's why, over the last few years, the Supreme Court has handed down rulings that limited the Alien Tort Statute's scope. Ilya Shapiro is at the Cato Institute, which also submitted an amicus brief. He says the Supreme Court has already ruled in 2013 that the Alien Tort Statute does not apply to violations committed outside the U.S.
I mean, it's understandable that if you have human rights violations, you would try to find a remedy for that wherever you can. But I don't think this is an appropriate way of either reading the Alien Tort Statute or of dragging American courts into disputes where Congress has not clearly stated they should be.
The case coming before the U.S. Supreme Court gives justices a chance to clarify their interpretation of the Alien Tort Statute. Human rights lawyers hope they'll consider the larger context. Europe is moving toward holding corporations liable for human rights violations committed outside their countries. And Canada's Supreme Court recently opened the door for Canadian companies to be tried in Canada for human rights violations abroad. Tara Skurr works on corporate accountability for Amnesty International Canada. She says the Canadian justices acknowledged that it's often difficult to bring a case against a company in the countries where violations happen.
In many of those situations, the
whether it may not be an independent or functioning judiciary, and a case against a powerful foreign company for human rights harms is likely to be unable to proceed fairly or without interference.
If other countries move toward more corporate accountability and the U.S. doesn't, international companies committing human rights violations may come to see the U.S. as a safe harbor, says Charity Ryerson of the Corporate Accountability Lab based in Chicago.
If companies know that they can get away with stuff like this, there's no reason for them to investigate their supply chains. So if you're incentivizing companies not being responsible for what happens in the production of the goods that they sell and that they produce, well, then you will have a lot of abuses.
Oral arguments before the Supreme Court start December 1st. For The World, I'm Rupa Shenoy.